All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can.
On Jam Radio, broadcasting live out of Dundee University in Scotland. I'm Ari Brin. I have a bit of a cold today, but we're going to power through it. Don't tell me you've never thought about traveling through time. In my mind, at least, it's a universal fantasy because it immediately makes us somebody different and special in the world. Maybe you arrive in the past and the first thing you do is to liberate the oppressed and bring the joy of technology to people's lives. Maybe you arrive in a dystopian future where only you still remember the key to democracy. Or maybe you fantasized, I definitely have, that in the future you're an important figure. Kind of like in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which, if you haven't seen it, is all about time travel in this very idea. Two kind of dumb Southern California dudes somehow become quasi-religious figures in the future.
Excellent!
This definitely appeals to me because, well, I'm from Southern California. But I don't want to just talk about time travel today. That would take all day long. In fact, this is an episode about time travel. But there will be no mention of a physical time machine in all of the next hour. Instead, we're going to talk about people who, by accident, fall asleep until the future arrives. Today, stories about people who didn't choose to travel through time, but suddenly find the future thrust upon them. Some, having fallen asleep against a tree or in an isolated cave, think they'll wake up tomorrow, and instead sleep for hundreds of years. No matter what the method, and whether they like it or not, these unwitting time travelers end up unintentional tourists in a strange future. What I'm most interested in is what happens when the sleeper wakes. Will they be a simple witness? Or will they be a hero who saves the immoral future? Everything from fairy tales to movies, coming up on Novum.
Hey, did you know?
Segment 1, Sleeping Beauty. I think I'm going to go in chronological order. I feel like I have so many stories to talk about today, and I can't even skim the surface of all the sleeper narratives that exist. I'll just try to cover a nice variety for today's show. The idea of the sleeper, or even suspended animation, is a very old one. In a lot of ways, this idea is closely related to immortality, so it makes sense that fables and fantasies would very early on use deep sleep as a method of long-term preservation for those who don't already possess our immortality, like vampires or elves. When you think about science fiction or cryogenic preservation, you might not think about Sleeping Beauty, but we're going to talk about Sleeping Beauty. Because this story laid the foundation for science fiction stories about sleepers. The earliest known version of Sleeping Beauty appeared in the 1300s, and it more or less attained its current storyline in the late 1600s in a version by Charles Perrault. You've almost certainly seen the 1959 Disney version of the film, which changes quite a number of plot elements that I'll get into. Let me remind you quickly of the plot, just to get a gist of it. As an infant, Sleeping Beauty, or Aurora, or Rose, based on your version of choice, is cursed by an evil fairy. Sleeping Beauty will prick her finger on a spinning wheel and die. There's no way around it. In later editions, the bad fairy is named Maleficent, and there's a whole backstory there, but that's not relevant today. Go check out the movie with Angelina Jolie for more of that. So the king and queen burn every spinning wheel in existence. But everyone knows about evil curses and how that's just not going to cut it. So the good fairy Merryweather is able to reduce the sentence so that Aurora will only sleep for 100 years, or until she's revived by true love's kiss. Side note, I have a big old problem with Merryweather, and you'd bet we're going to talk about it. This is all related, just wait for it. Of course, as luck would have it...
Touch the spindle. Touch it, I say.
She pricks her finger. Aurora falls into a deep sleep, just like, as was predicted, in which she appears not to age. In this state, her metabolism undoubtedly slows to a standstill. We might as well call this a state of suspended animation. For the fairies, this is quite a moral conundrum. When Aurora wakes up in 100 years, still a beautiful princess in her prime, everyone she's ever known will be dead. So while she's found a way to escape the aging process for a century, everyone else is gonna continue living and grow old, right?
They're not going to.
They aren't.
But we'll put them all to sleep until Rose awakens.
I hope you could hear that last clip. It was a little quiet, but basically, with their fairy dust, the fairies drug everyone in the castle. And regardless of what anyone wants, every citizen of the kingdom is pretty much cryogenically frozen alongside Sleeping Beauty. For 100 years! Am I alone in finding this particular act by Merryweather maddening? What if some of them have relatives in the next town over? What if they have crops to attend to? Are those put to sleep too? And think of what can culturally happen in 100 years. While the kingdom is slumbering, a war could break out, a new technology could be invented, a disease could spread. These questions are not addressed. That is what makes this story not science fiction. Not that it is trying to be. First of all, the plot is not concerned with the rate of societal, cultural, biological change. The story isn't concerned with any factor outside of the princess. So many stories adopt this theme of total stasis as a dramatic element. Snow White was actually written in the early 1800s, but the most popular version is the 1937 Disney animated film. I find the bulk of this story unrelated to the topic at hand, except for one very vital part. Snow White, under an almost identical curse to Sleeping Beauty, goes into a state of suspended animation after eating a poison apple. But here's where it gets interesting and relevant. Instead of lying out in the open and while she sleeps, Snow White is placed into this gorgeous and, dare I say, futuristic glass coffin. This coffin must have served as inspiration for future depictions of cryogenic sleep chambers or pods for suspended animation in deep space travel. Currently, our science regarding how to store a person in stasis for extended periods of time is not to the point of practical use. But we understand that probably a body has got to be kept pretty cold or otherwise chemically stagnated. we are now accustomed to seeing sleep pods everywhere in science fiction. And usually for aesthetic reasons, I'm guessing. They are glass coffins. Seriously, think Alien, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Lost in Space. I'm just gonna say, Snow White did it first. The number of books and movies that involve cryogenic freezing is so vast I could do a show just about those. For now, I want to visit one more story, written just a few years after Snow White, that brings us back to this idea of the unwitting time traveler, with a very unsettling, science fiction-y twist. A short story by Washington Irving in 1819 provides a nice contrast to Sleeping Beauty's aversion to portraying change. Rip Van Winkle. It's all about awakening to a changed world. The story begins shortly before the American Revolution in the state of New York. Rip Van Winkle is three things: a loyalist of King George, a fabulous storyteller who amuses all the village children, and a lazy husband. After his nagging wife chews him out yet again, Rip takes to the mountains and falls asleep against a tree. He sleeps for 20 years. In this state of imperfect suspended animation, he has aged plenty when he awakes. He's grown a long white beard, wrinkles, the whole deal. When he goes back into town, the buildings are unrecognizable to him. His wife is dead. All his friends are dead. He doesn't know any of the people, although he does eventually meet his own grown-up children. Moreover, the world has changed. The American Revolution has been fought and won, and Rip finds that King George's portraits have been replaced by those of George Washington, and he gets into a lot of trouble by declaring his loyalty to Britain. It's a lot to take in. The confusion that he expresses at awakening into the strange new world is heartbreaking.
Anybody here know Rip Van Winkle? I am he. That is, I was myself last night, but I fell asleep on the mountain, and they changed my gun. And everything's changed, and I'm changed, and I can't tell what my name is or who I am.
That's from a beautiful and surreal claymation version of Rip Van Winkle. This story does portray stasis, but not technically preservation. He really is a sleeper, not a time traveler. But in this case, it's hard to separate the two. Deep sleep is not just a plot mechanism here. He's not someone to be saved. The character isn't stagnant or isolated from the world. The movie version of this story seriously disturbed me as a child. I think I still remember watching it when I was young, and I know why. I believe the idea of time travel here is used to explore our fears of missing out, of becoming old and irrelevant. It preys on our capacity for regret and our terror that time will pass us by. And when we're old, we might not be able to understand where it all went. I would make the argument that Rip Van Winkle is science fiction. Outside of an explanation about how Rip came to fall asleep and some of the more mystical aspects of the story, I forgive those. It takes place in a dimension of a realistically changing world. And that's the main box it needs to check for me. Everyone has their own definitions of science fiction, but Rip Van Winkle shows us how this idea of the sleeper or the unwitting time traveler snuck into science fiction. Here is the bridge between Sleeping Beauty and H.G. Wells. Irving wants to portray the intensity of the change that occurred. So why not drop in a person from an earlier time into that future? What a great way to comment and critique unreal or hypothetical changes. And while Rip doesn't enact any change into this world that he arrives in, and people probably just think he's crazy, his character shows how the accidental time traveler can dredge up feelings of deep nostalgia for an earlier time, and perhaps a simpler time. When we return from a very short break, the metamorphosis into science fiction is complete. with depictions of sleepers in early science fiction books and more recent film, some of which you have surely seen. Also, the addictive, very self-righteous idea that a person from the past could be the savior of the future. Or the past. You'll see what I mean in just a moment. Hi, you're listening to Novum, in case you're just joining us, a podcast about science fiction. And today we're exploring the origins and continuing legacy of the sleeper tale. Stories about people who didn't choose to travel through time and don't do it through the traditional means of a time machine, if that can be considered traditional, but awake anyway to a strange new world. In this segment, sleepers take action. They interfere with a world in which they don't belong. And often they pay dearly for it. We'll follow a few sleepers who awake in a world that they find problematic. This is wholly different from the stories we've explored thus far. They all become supremely significant figures, and they try to save the world by making it more like the one they came from. All right, let's start off with Mark Twain's 1889 novel, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. After he is hit in the head, a firearm manufacturer named Hank is transported back to the medieval era. Waking up in King Arthur's Court, Hank pretty quickly realizes that he can use his level of education and technological knowledge to quickly rise to the top of society. And Hank performs a number of tricks that convince everyone that he is a sorcerer. He humiliates Merlin and goes on to humiliate a slew of so-called sorcerers. Soon, Hank becomes the second most powerful person in the kingdom after King Arthur. So Hank uses this position to establish secret schools to re-educate the youth and drive out medievalism in favor of an urbanized, Americanized way of life. He implores King Arthur to abolish slavery and equips knights with guns and bicycles. Before we judge, Hank's reaction is understandable in my eyes. Sure, we have the whole butterfly effect thing to worry about, but the medieval age was a dark time. Don't tell me you could go back in time and not try to tweak things, or save somebody, or improve people's lives. Unfortunately, things start to go awry for Hank. The Catholic Church becomes afraid of him and his inconceivable powers, and he's unable to stop a tragedy from occurring. And after a bloody battle involving the firearms that Hank created, it's questionable whether he did the right thing to interfere after all. Mark Twain's book is the only work I'm mentioning today in which a sleeper goes into the past. I don't want to dip my toes too much into this genre because it is stuffed. There are tons of books, in my opinion, where people fall asleep and end up in the past, and it's a little different than what I want to get into. By A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court is an early exploration of the enormous impact that a traveler from another time can have on society and what an enormous responsibility it is. I feel like this is very connected to my topic from last week on the invasion of Earth by aliens, which you can listen to online now if you visit my Facebook or Podomatic page of the show. In that episode, I asked whether it was right to interfere with another civilization if it appears in a more primitive level of development. I'd say sleepers are a kind of alien, and many of them can't help but colonize the places that they go. One of the most influential works of the sleeper subgenre is The Sleeper Awakes by H.G. Wells, which was first serialized as When the Sleeper Awakes in 1898. The story opens on a traveler, not a time traveler, encountering a desolate insomniac named Graham, who hasn't slept in more than 6 days, and he's at the end of his rope. We've all been there. Sleep deprived, and then when we finally sleep, it's like for 12 hours. When Graham at last gets to sleep, he doesn't wake up for 200 years. Very much like Rip Van Winkle, Graham encounters a changed world when he wakes. Also, he owns the Earth. Yeah, not only has his unique biological status made him into a demigod for a lot of people, but his ancestors have wisely invested in this half-alive, half-dead figure. They've put large sums of money into a trust that's garnered massive interest over the centuries. Graham and his property are in the hands of a shady group of trustees called the White Council, who rule the Earth with this vast wealth. After the initial shock, Earth seems like a marvelous place to own. Moving walkways have replaced roads. Books have become obsolete. Their content is displayed in this addictive, immersive films. In every rich person's apartment, babble machines speak the newspapers aloud. In Graham's own words, and this is a quote, "We thought the world complex and crowded and civilized enough. Yet I see, although in this world I am barely 4 days old, looking back on my own time, that it was a queer, barbaric time, the mere beginning of this new order. The mere beginning of this new order. You will find it hard to understand how little I know." He also refers to the age that he comes from as the Stone Age. It's a little harsh. As a side note, it's crazy how much of our modern world H.G. Wells predicted back in the 19th century. There's even a machine in this book that acts like Skype. But despite all these technological marvels, there is a darker side. Graham is little more than a puppet in this world. Did I mention that the world is actually an undeniable dystopia where the poor are kept in indebted servitude and democracy has fallen out of fashion? Well, Graham takes action. Having come from a democratic age, he is appalled that the future has degraded so much from visions of utopia from his own age. So Graham leads a rebellion, topples the dictatorship, and heroically conducts a battle in the air. To questionable effects. Regardless of how futuristic The Sleeper Awakes may appear, it's in other ways a very nostalgic novel. A young revolutionary from the New Age tells Graham, "Your days were the days of freedom. Men are no longer free, no greater, no better than the men of your time." You can see how novels with this sleeper savior narrative can really rile people up and get them self-righteous about where they come from. As a proud person from the past, I get it. The idea that a sleeper from a current age, or a contemporary age to the author, will awaken into a future of societal decay to become its savior is a potent idea. In our next segment, I want to call out a few films and TV shows. And a few of those will be Futurama, Woody Allen's 1973 film Sleeper, and Mike Judge's 2006 film Idiocracy. Let me take a moment to mention Futurama. The main character wakes up after he is frozen in a cryogenic unit. He does not intend to be. He wakes in a far future world where everything seems to have changed, except for the staple institution of the pizza delivery boy. Futurama takes its influence from many other works about the sleeper. For instance, the suicide booths. I don't know exactly why, but suicide booths are everywhere in books starring sleeping time travelers. The H.G. Wells, The Sleeper Awakes have them. But Futurama's take on them was directly inspired by Robert Sheckley's 1958 book about an unintentional time traveler called Immortality Incorporated. That book is about a man snatched from the past by a corporation who wishes to use him in their advertising campaign about, you know, man from the past. He's taken to a future where people kill themselves for pleasure and fun or hire professional killers because scientists have figured out the key to the afterlife. Indeed, the future is often portrayed as extremely pleasurable and morally decayed in a sense. The film Sleeper by Woody Allen definitely takes his cues from this. The title is almost certainly inspired by Wells' novel, The Sleeper Awakes, but I can't confirm this. In Sleeper, Woody Allen's character Miles, who was put in cryopreservation after his death, again without his consent, is awakened 200 years later by rebels of an oppressive regime who hope to use him for their purposes. Take a listen to this short clip from the film. His reaction to his awakening. You find scenes like this, by the way, in pretty much every film about a sleeper. You hear the shock, the confusion, the agony. Here it's done a bit differently. Warning, this clip is slightly edited for radio appropriateness.
My doctor said I'd be up and on my feet in 5 days. He was off by 199 years. And where am I anyhow? I mean, what happened to everybody? Where are all my friends?
You must understand that everyone you knew in the past has been dead nearly 200 years.
But they all ate organic rice.
The reason why the bumbling Miles is resurrected? He's the only one without a biometric eye identification, so he can't be tracked by the dystopian police state like everyone else. Sleeper is a parody of science fiction as a whole, so it doesn't directly follow the hero's storyline, and neither does Futurama. Yet, the sleeper's ignorance of future customs makes Miles both a curiosity and an important weapon for the people of the future. In a way, he's free. He's both born without an ID, and he's not indoctrinated to the questionable customs of the future. And he freely critiques many aspects of the future and acts as sort of a moral philosopher. And he does alter people's lives. He's especially not a fan of the free love of the society, or the strange way that future people engage in sexual relations. You will have to watch the movies to find out more, I'm afraid. Mike Judge's 2006 film, Idiocracy, is the perfect example of the sleeper savior. Basically, two people, one man and one woman, are put into suspended animation for an army experiment. They're supposed to be awoken in 1 year's time, but through a series of very unfortunate events, they aren't awoken for 500 years. In that time, humanity's intelligence levels have taken a serious nosedive. I will let Idiocracy's narrator explain.
Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized and more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down. How did this happen? Evolution does not necessarily reward intelligence. With no natural predators to thin the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species. Having kids.
If you watch this movie, try not to take it too seriously. I'm going to say, I personally love this movie. Not because I think it actually predicts the future. And if you go online, you will find plenty of self-professed geniuses who call this movie a documentary. I like it because it's hilarious and it's actually not too mean despite the content. It portrays a very fleshed out world actually and asks, what would the world look like if every human on the planet had a bottom level IQ? And what if a normal person from our own age of normal intelligence arrives in this future and is suddenly considered a genius? This world is in a serious need of rescue. It's falling apart. Buildings are collapsing. In the future, language has seriously degraded. And the most popular show on the planet is Ow My Balls, which is just a guy getting hit in the balls. Apologies to listeners, I'm just stating the facts here. The world is saturated in gaudy advertisement. And water has been totally replaced by an energy drink named Brondo. And people are starving because none of the crops can grow with Brondo. Just like Sleeper, the two travelers from the past awake without scannable wrists, which is a staple of the future. Everyone has tattoos on their wrists that allow them to be easily identified by the government.
Why come you don't have a tattoo?
Oh my god!
You're not unscannable, are you?
Oh my god!
You're unscannable.
Unscannable!
No, you don't understand. You gotta let me talk to someone in the army.
Wait a second.
They're all dead. Everybody I know is dead.
Oh my god!
Oh! Ah! Oh! No! Oh! No! Oh! No! Oh! Come on!
Cue lots of unintelligible screaming. Joe is unscannable, which makes him in violation of this new future, which causes a lot of problems for him. For a while, the two sleepers can think of nothing but escaping this world of decay altogether. When they hear about the existence of a time machine, they attempt to escape. But after Joe takes an IQ test that declares him the smartest person on the planet, the President of America, President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho, makes him Secretary of the Interior. Moreover, the President declares to the nation, Joe is capable of fixing all the nation's problems in 1 week. And Joe turns out to be the only person capable of saving the future from its severely stupid self. But it isn't easy. He can't convince America to stop watering its plants with Brondo, because half the nation is employed by Brondo. And people are convinced that it's great for plants because it has electrolytes.
For the last time, I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
But Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
After Joe at last achieves a small victory, he's torn between going back to his own time, where he'll just be an average guy, or staying in the future, where he might be able to actually help these poor souls. small spoiler alert. Oh, wait a second. He decides to stay. I do not understand this reasoning. Wouldn't it be easier to save the future if you go back in time? This is kind of similar to Back to the Future 2, wherein the main character goes forward in time to help save his children, and then goes back in time? I do not get this whatsoever. I think most of the time travel narratives in existence do not really make sense when held up to scrutiny. It's not exactly on the same level as, say, a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, in which potential changes in the past might have an impact on how the future turns out. But it is the same kind of storyline. A person from our time enters a morally troubled world and decides to change it. But maybe it isn't their world to change. A sleeper is an outsider, an alien to the new world. Yet the sleeper is presumed to know what's best for it. Then again, if we are transported into the future, how many atrocities can we stand to witness before we act? Are we confined as humans to only have prerogative in the time in which we were born? I think time travel makes many people uncomfortable because they feel a need to protect the sanctity of time. But even this is something to question. Why not mess around and continually try to remake time with a little of your image thrown into the mix? I think for now, until these questions are answered, we should be grateful that time machines don't exist. Until then, science fiction alone allows us to visit strange future worlds. And our fantasies of grandeur are luckily confined to our imaginations. And we've almost reached the end of our episode today. Thank you so much for listening. We've covered a lot of ground here, centuries of stories about unwitting time travelers, none of whom actually traveled through time with the help of a time machine. I found this week a particularly difficult but fun challenge. I'm always trying to improve this podcast. This is my third week hosting the show or a podcast in general. So if you have any comments or suggestions, I would really love to hear from you. Please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/NovumPodcast. You can also listen to our past episodes on our Podomatic page, which I've linked from there. And I wanted to thank a couple of people in particular today. Christopher McIntyre for our original theme song, Cheryl Brigham for our graphics, and David Brand for many ideas. And thank you for everyone who supports the podcast or even listens to it. Back next week with more Novum.